Welcome, and thank you for joining me. This is episode 8 of the Mbali Nwako podcast, and I can't believe that I'm only 2 episodes shy of the 10th episode. And so I wanted to thank you for listening and for subscribing to the podcast. Today's guest is Russell Luck, who is an entrepreneur, technology attorney, television analyst, and public speaker. Russell is the founder of SwiftV, which is a company we're going to be talking about in this episode. SwiftV is the world's first technology platform for the livestock trading industry and has already broken a few records in the online livestock trading space during the COVID-19 lockdown period. What I like about my conversation with Russell is his passion for his business, which kind of rubs off you in a way. And who said that lawyers are boring? Russell definitely has some spunk and personality. Once again, as with the previous episode, this conversation is quite heavy with information. And so I've included all the important links discussed in this episode in the show notes to this podcast. So be sure to contact Russell after this interview if needs be. But let me not waste any more of your time. Let's take a listen. My name is Mbali Nwako, and welcome to the Mbali Nwako podcast. I'm a farmer, and I created this podcast to discuss all things agriculture. I will be interviewing and having in-depth conversations with industry experts such as farmers, scientists, agronomists, agri-tech specialists, to policymakers and investors. Basically, anyone you can think of in agriculture and across its value chain. So let's dive right into today's episode. Hi, Russell. Thank you so much for joining the Mbali Nwako podcast. I know you've been very busy, especially in these last couple of months. So thank you for gracing me with your time today.
Thank you. It's great to be on here. And as I said to you a second ago, it's a brilliant idea to have a podcast because there's so little information out there. So it's a great idea. So thank you.
Before we go into SwiftV, I just want to know about you. Where you're from, where did you grow up, and what did you study?
Perfect. So I have a non-agri background. So I grew up in Cape Town. Okay, so I'm a technology attorney, and I also am the CEO of SwiftV. And for my sins, I'm also on a television program that no one watches, but you can catch me on channel ENCA. I'm a technology analyst there, so every once in a while I'm tech and law. But yeah, homegrown South African, really. And that's my background.
Great. And so how did you incorporate SwiftV? What was the idea behind SwiftV?
Sure thing. So I started getting into agri because I kind of saw that as a technology lawyer, I see all different businesses all day, every day. And my job is always to forecast the future. You know, I've got to look at where the new gaps in the world are. And I thought that fintech was quite a tap market. And I thought that insurtech and that kind of stuff was very tapped. But I think the fundamental is as artificial intelligence continues to take jobs, and that'll be the future, artificial intelligence will take many jobs. Mm-hmm. As population rise, we'll need to make food in a smarter and more productive way. And we'll need to use space, being agricultural space, urban space, whatever. We'll need to use it in a smarter way. So with the background of, I was thinking about AI, food, and space dominating the next 10 to 20 years of business, I then started looking around agri. And what I saw was in South Africa and other parts of the world as well, in droughts, cattle dies on the land before it can even be given away for free. So obviously this is a huge problem, resource scarcity, food inefficiency, et cetera. And I thought, sure, if cattle's dying on the land, there must be a better way to kind of connect the market. And through that idea, I kind of saw that there's massive trading inefficiencies, because if you're up in Joburg and I'm down in Cape Town, there's a massive drought in Joburg. And when there's a drought, your sellers in the neighboring areas can't really buy livestock because they've got nothing to feed it with, because, you know, you've got to graze the animals. So because you can't match a buyer, you've got no one to sell to. Whereas me in Cape Town or in the Eastern Cape, if there was some sort of a platform where I could see that you had livestock for sale, then me outside your area could potentially purchase livestock. So that was the evolution from law to looking at the future of business. And then I fell into agri, and then I saw this problem that needed solving. And that came the background to SwiftV.
Okay. So what makes SwiftV different from traditional or online auctions?
Sure. So what we did, so what I saw in the market when trying to solve this problem was I saw that people, non-techies, were trying to cut, people were trying to solve this problem by using traditional tech ideas, which won't work. For example, I saw a lot of things where people try to cut out the middleman. So you've got a website similar to Gumtree and you're advertising livestock. The problem with that is I don't know if the livestock advertised is actually as promised. So let me actually go a step back and say, what makes SwiftV different is this. We approach the value chain differently. At the moment, the value chain works like this. If I'm a buyer and you're a seller, I don't sell my livestock directly because you as the buyer have no guarantee that the livestock I'm selling is as advertised. So we sell through a livestock agent who organizes an auction and guarantees that the livestock is of a certain quality. Now, what people try to do is they try to cut out the livestock agent. So they thought that one buyer and one seller would trade directly. Like if I go into Gumtree, someone's going to look at the picture of a livestock and buy it. And those businesses failed. Or people try to do online auctions without any visuals of the animals. And that failed. And the person selling or running the auction was not a livestock agent. So instead of everybody else trying to cut out the agent, what makes SwiftV different is we run towards the agent. We said, hang on, to make good trade, I want to empower the livestock agents at their auctions to trade not just in their narrow area of, say, Joburg, but across the country. So that's what makes SwiftV different. We are the platform for agents. We empower them and we give them the technology to trade across the whole country and outside, internationally as well.
So basically, your customer is the agent and not specifically the farmer.
100%. That's like a one-sentence answer to something that took me about two paragraphs to answer. But yes, you summed it up perfectly.
Yeah, because we think about auctions or livestock auctions, and we think that, you know, it's the auction's responsibility to ensure that farmers come through or pull through. They've got good livestock. Yes. Because, you know, everybody wants to make money throughout that transaction or on that specific day. So, yeah, great. Yes. SwiftV is your client is the agent and not necessarily the farmer. And then it's the agent's responsibility to have that relationship with the farmer. Is that correct?
100% correct.
Okay. When you're servicing the agent, is there a specific commission that you take from the agent? And then I know it's not maybe your priority, but then does the agent also then take commission through to the farmer who's coming to sell on the auction? Just how does it work?
Sure thing. So two ways that we kind of get booked out for an auction. So number one, the agency books us out directly. So they say, Russell, we've got 10 auctions and on these dates, and then we will go and we'll set up and do, the agency books us out. We get paid by the livestock agency and they will, and we'll come there on the day, do all the work and run an online auction. Mm-hmm. And we don't take commission from the transactions. We just charge a very basic flat fee. Mm-hmm. The idea is that we're a volume business. And if we charge large amounts of money, then agencies or take a percentage of their commission, then agencies don't want to use us. So the one way is agencies book us out directly. Alternatively, farmers come to us themselves and say, hey, I'm having a big auction. I want an online service provider. So we say, great, we'll do the online side of things. Who is your preferred agency? You choose the agency, the one you've always used, and we will work with them on the auction. To do the online side of the auction. And it's the exact same process. We don't take a commission. We charge the same flat fee. So unfortunately, we're not rich, but we like to think that we help a lot of people and somewhere along the line, we'll do well.
Yeah. Yeah. You've mentioned something new there, that the farmer can approach SwiftV directly and say that, yes, I want to start my own auction. But does the agent always need to be present in that transaction? Why can't the farmer, especially if it's a farmer that's got like hundreds of thousands of cattle, I'm just going to throw a random number, like let's say 2,000 cattle, and he or she wants to auction directly through SwiftV and cut out the middleman. And maybe they can, you know, by that time they've got some capital, they can create a little platform in-house where SwiftV can integrate to that. Does the agent always need to be there? I hope I'm not burning any bridges with any agent listening, but I'm just trying to understand.
Of course. No, you're asking the exact question that many people ask, especially the agents.
Yeah.
So farmers do come to us and ask if they can cut out the agent. We always say no. So, and that's just because theoretically, could you do a livestock auction and cut out the agent? Kind of. But I think also people and other people have tried that in the past. Maybe they'll be successful with one auction or two auctions, but that's not our business model. So people who have tried, we never ever cut the agent out. That's our most important thing. Why? It's agent number one is the marketer. So he's the one who's got, or he or she, excuse me, has got all the contacts to actually make the auction a success. But more than that, they are the ones who are going to do guarantee the money, guarantee the animals and things like that. And although we could do that, we want to do, you know, it's for me, it's not so much about just making money. It's much more about a vision and solving the problem. And by solving the problem of livestock, of inefficient trading, hopefully the money will come, which is no different to any of the big tech companies work the same way. Google didn't start off to make money. Google started off to try to organize the world's information. And Facebook started off trying to help people connect together. The big tech companies, their morals got lost along the way or whatever, but they started off trying to solve a problem, and we are as well. And I think if we're trying to cut agents out, we're not solving the problem, we're adding to the problem.
Yeah. So do you find that, do you ever find yourself in a situation where there's too few agents and you need to grow?
No. We definitely find ourselves in a situation where farmers try to get clever and cut out their agents. And we just say, no, we don't do that. No, but I mean, the agents, people also underestimate. Agents have been doing this for 100 years and they're also trusted advisors. They'll come and say, Bali, you know, you've got Angus, and there's going to be a drought coming. I think you should bring some Brangus onto your farm. I'll go source you some Brangus. So they really are very useful in the value chain, and it's a relationships-based game. So we rely on them or leverage off them very heavily. The strength of why we've done so well so fast is that I think we've leveraged off the existing networks.
Yeah. I know on LinkedIn, you shared a few posts a couple of weeks back or months back. So I can't remember exactly that, you know, you hit record sales of specific cattle breed. How's the journey been like, and especially doing the online auctions during a global pandemic? Did COVID-19 also maybe affect or accelerate the growth of your business?
So first of all, I just want to unpack that thing on the records, because everyone asked me about this. I have absolutely no idea why we are breaking South African records, but I'm very grateful that we are, because it's a massive economic downturn. I guess before that, the farmers were suffering drought, and the ones who held back on purchases now have cash. But I mean, it's as a businessman, as a lawyer, it's unheard of to think that in the worst global recession, people are paying more for livestock now than they ever have before. So we're just very happy about that. Some of it has to do with the fact that now people have choice. And with choice comes, you know, people have choice and they're spending more on livestock. And then also we have international buyers. So we have people everywhere from Thailand, France, America, wherever, and Australia buy livestock from us. And as the rand gets cheaper, I think that might be a factor. But so I don't know why we're breaking South African records, but we broke two of them. We broke the most expensive boron ever sold in South Africa by 1.7 million. And the most expensive Simbra bull ever sold in South Africa. And the South African record for any livestock purchased was 1.8 million rand. And so we are just 100,000 rand off from the South African record in total, which was kind of upsetting. But no, we're very happy to break records. And then to answer the second part of your question about COVID, it's tough to tell, because when we spent 3 years in R&D, and then when we launched a year and a half ago, and we had very steady pickup. I think that we had a small break because there was a moratorium on livestock trading. When foot and mouth broke out, they said, you can't trade, so our bookings dropped. But then, during COVID, our bookings definitely increased steadily, but now not even in the COVID market. For next year already, we chock-a-block full with bookings. So we're very happy about that.
Sure. So explain that. Your chock-a-block with bookings. Are auctions prepared or booked or scheduled in advance?
Yes. So, you know, it's also why it's a massive responsibility. It's a pleasure to have the responsibility and the trust involved. But, you know, a farmer borrows money throughout the year in order to produce their whatever their product is. And then you have one day on their sale to make it work. So the nice thing about this is if you keep a farmer happy and you do nice sales for them online, you've got a customer for life. Every year, the same thing, they get a cyclical sale. So people who are happy from this year have already booked us for next year. So our auctions are very auction diary is very full, and we're scaling up a team. The downside of that is a lot of pressure as well, because if you mess up a farmer's online side of the auction, then you've really damaged his business for a year. So we're very busy. Thank God, I think we've done good service and added good value to farmers, and we booked up for next year. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned you did about 3 years of research and development, and you launched your product. You launched SwiftV last year. So are you the only one in the business, or how big is the SwiftV team now?
Sure. So SwiftV now is I think 13 full time and another 6 or 7 devs. So let's call that 20 full time and remote staff in the team, and we're going to scale up again another probably 10 people by the end of next year. So we'll probably be a 30-person company somewhere along the way. So yeah, we're a sizable team. We base purely on demand. The market is saying that they want online auctions, or we're just growing to satisfy the demand.
Yeah. So, and I know agritech is such a huge buzzword these days. And have you been approached by any investors, especially with these records that you're breaking? Have you been approached by investors that either want to partner with you or invest in your business for equity?
Yes. So, first of all, the truth be told, the reason why it was 3 years R&D, it wasn't just that it was R&D, it's that I had to work a full-time job in my law firm in order to fund this business and startup to the point where we could get an investment. Back then, the climate was very much, it was the Zuma years of government and overseas, generally South African money was going out of the country and overseas money wasn't going into the country. But so we got our first investment then, just at the end of the Zuma years when President Ramaphosa came in. I think international sentiment was more positive. And then so we launched, we did very nicely, and now we're just about to close our Series B round. So yes, we have investments, and we also have very exciting corporate partnerships to announce next year, but you'll have to watch the space. Hopefully I can come on your podcast again and tell you more once they're announced.
Yes, please. I'm excited. I'm quite eager to hear the news. Well, congratulations on that. Yeah, so tell me, Russell, you know, sure, we're in a difficult time in South Africa from an economic point of view, and you've highlighted some of those examples. Walk me through that process. I'm an entrepreneur, you're an entrepreneur, and sure. How difficult or easy is it to raise money for a startup? I mean, you said you launched the product about last year, so you haven't been around for 5 years from an operational point of view, you know? So how has that investment journey or raising funding or capital for your business been since you started engaging with investors?
Sure. So the short answer of how easy or difficult is it to get capital, it's between extremely difficult and impossible. Somewhere on that spectrum, if you're South African, it's very hard as an entrepreneur to get capital. And I see this, you know, in law all the time. These young startups come to me and they say, I want to do a business, but I don't have access to capital. So as South Africans, I think we're so resilient. We have such brilliant ideas and we're such clever people. But people, the capital side of things don't always back South Africa. I think a lot of it is because on the top end, people see political mismanagement and things like that, you know, and they think, oh, I don't want to put my money into this venture. The key to South Africa's success, of course, is foreign investment. Everyone knows that. So I think COVID and things like this, I think as a country, we've done really well relative to other countries who started a lockdown and then opened it and then had to close it down again and things like that. And I'm a big fan with I think our new there are a lot of very strong politicians coming through. And I think with that comes positive sentiment, and hopefully raising capital will be easier. But it's extremely difficult to find capital, even for very good ideas. And I think my advice to other entrepreneurs is just keep going. You have no choice. You know, if you want to start a business and you have a dream, push hard for it. And yeah, eventually things come right.
Yeah.
But it's not easy.
So you self-funded your business because you said you had to work full-time at a law firm, et cetera. So Correct. Is that the advice you would give to an entrepreneur who definitely wants to start any business, but most importantly, a tech business?
My advice is definitely try get money and not do the Russ or Luck route. That's my advice. Easier way to do it, please. Please go for that. Go for option A. But if you can't get capital, you know, normally what will happen in the investment circle is people don't fund ideas. People fund businesses or proofs of concept or whatever. So my thing was, I had a great idea, blah, blah, blah. They're like, great, come back to us when you have a business. So I'm like, well, it's chicken and egg. I can't have a business unless I have the money to do a business. So I had to fund myself. Luckily, it's my own law firm. So the boss is nice to me and let me work on two jobs because I am the boss. But yeah, you've got to have the your main hustle's got to fund your side hustle until your side hustle becomes your main hustle. Mm. You know, that's simple.
Mm. So having been around for just over a year, what is your view in terms of the future of agriculture and technology?
So, yeah. So as I said before, I think the future will be dictated by artificial intelligence taking all the jobs and people needing to use space better, being land, and make food in a smarter way, because populations will rise. And you already see that with China. You know, I respect the Chinese. They'll come into Africa knowing no language or anything, and they're just starting to either take the resources or just put down shops and sell goods anywhere. And that's because there's such demand in China for food and space. I think the future of agriculture is, of course, interwoven with tech. My personal attitude is, you know, people say, you're in a technology business. And I say, no, every business is a technology business. If you're a retailer, if you're a whatever it is, a shoe salesman, if you're a grocer, you've got to have a technology and online component. Because if you don't have a technology-based business, you're going to not have a business for much longer. So the key to agriculture is going to be in agri-tech. And the quicker people embrace it, the better.
Mm. You mentioned a critical point earlier on in our discussion, saying that, you know, some farmers approach SwiftV trying to bypass the agent model or the use of using an agent. And then you said that it's very difficult also to cut out the agent because they've been around for donkey years, you know. And so my question is, having established SwiftV and having to bring this new concept of AI technology, online sales in the way that SwiftV does it, did you get a positive reception from the agents, or did they say, ah, you know what, you're a young man, we don't understand anything about AI, we've done this for 100 years or 50 years before, we don't want to change anything that's not broken? Like, how were those conversations like with the agents?
100%. So in the beginning, very much what you say, people are always resistant to change and resistant to new technology. Not that they're resistant to the ideas. No one wants to be the first person to try something new in case it fails. So from that point of view, you've got to convince people. On the other side of the coin, you know, these agencies and all farmers are incredibly resilient entrepreneurs. As you know, you're a farmer yourself. Mm-hmm. So they see something working or the potential to see something working, they will embrace it. There's an idea out there that farmers are backwards. They don't know what's going on. And that's completely out of ignorance. Farming, agriculture is the toughest business I've ever seen. And the fact that these farmers have done it for so many years shows that they're good businessmen and they're open to ideas. So once you convince them, and it's just a numbers game. If I come to you and say, listen, no extra work for you. You're the agent, your show. You just pay me a small flat fee. I'm going to put up my cameras and everything and my do in places where there's no internet, manage to bring online buyers, and I can make you millions of rands online. Are you keen to do it? And, you know, they say yes pretty quickly. So, yeah, there was initially a problem with market adoption, but it's come right.
Yeah. So, excuse my ignorance. I know. yeah, like you alluded, livestock auctions in South Africa is pretty an established business or industry. Is there,
yes.
Maybe for the future, does that opportunity exist for SwiftV to then work across other commodities, you know, to help farmers? I know you don't necessarily directly work with the farmers, but just yes. to help solve the challenge of farmers finding yes. it difficult to access markets. Is there that room for growth for SwiftV to maybe expand into other commodities and open new markets?
So now you're asking all the juicy questions, which I'm not supposed to answer. But
really? Why?
Yes, indeed.
The news that's coming along.
It's one of many. It's one of many. But so, yes. So first of all, I think there's some very exciting platforms coming up next year and very innovative stuff. We got approached by a lot of people. We are going to be involved in interesting projects or projects, and they're very much focused on same efficiencies and buying power you're going to create through SwiftV in livestock. We're going to bring to other parts of the market. So, yes, there is huge scope for it. I wish I could tell you more.
Yeah.
And all I will say is you're going to have first scoop. If I'm lucky enough to get on your podcast again, you're going to have first scoop when I can pull the rabbit out of the hat and reveal all my secrets.
Okay. I'm definitely putting it out there now. Booked. Cool. Done. It's a done deal.
Great. Excellent. Excellent.
But that is awesome. I think, sure, you've alluded so much into your law firm and your expertise. Just maybe
yes.
break it down to us. What do you do?
Sure.
Because there could be entrepreneurs having fantastic solutions from an agri-tech perspective or just a tech
yes.
perspective that could
yes.
Help a number of sectors, not specifically agri. So I want to approach Russell Luck. What does your law firm do?
Yes, 100%. Livestock business is called SwiftV, V-E-E, and my law firm is called Swift Tech Law. Okay.
Got it.
So we do is, so you can always see the link. So half my team are lawyers and my other half are software programmers. So people come to us from any industry. Someone who has made money in a retail business, say nappies, and I'll say, I've got an idea for a tech business. And it's based on anything from cryptocurrency to whatever, to an online platform, whatever the case is. Is this a good idea? So that's my number one skill is I see all these businesses all day, every day. So I say, yes, it's a good idea or no, there's 50 of these in the market. You know, it's not a good idea. But basically, if I get past that stage to have a product market fit, I then say, cool, my developers will develop the app for you if you want it. And then all my lawyers will do the software licensing and the contracts and try help with venture capital raises and structuring deals. So that's what my law firm does. So it's very much to your point of if someone's got a good idea, we generally work with big corporates rather than startups. But if someone's got a good idea, they can pitch it to us and we can say, yes, it's a good one or no, it's not. And we work with them all the way from the bottom in the inception of the project all the way up to launch and hopefully sell out for IPO and when they become a big public company. That's the idea. That's the dream.
Okay. So I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. Why do you work with corporates instead of
yes.
startups? Is it because they got the most
yes.
money?
Well, because they can actually pay us, which is always a nice thing to do when you run a business, because I can live on love and fresh air, but it's amazing how my team members can't. So, you know, corporates pay us. Also, corporates actually are very innovative with their new projects. So a client like Google or whatever, they'll come to us and say, we want to launch this sector of balloon on hot air balloon internet or this app for whatever. So that we look at as just an app-based project. And they'll have their in-house devs and we'll do our thing and then we'll kind of strategize and structure how to do it. Anything from that to a private person doing the same thing, but as opposed to a 20-year-old startup, you know, student or whatever, we have only so many hours in the day and we are limited to that kind of a client. So it's more people who can, you know, pay for fees and have a bit of financial substance behind them.
Okay, so maybe let's talk money.
Yes.
I could be an entrepreneur that has a fantastic idea to change the agricultural
yes.
landscape. So how much should I be budgeting to start my tech business on average?
It's a brilliant question. I'm not going to be boring and just answer, well, how long is a piece of string? I'll say so,
yeah.
at least, which it is. That's the textbook answer. So I'd rather answer it and say, well, are you trying to achieve something as a website, or to develop your product is going to cost you money, and somehow to live is going to cost you money? So I would blanket for somehow budgeting that you have 12 months of runway to put time and effort into this business, and to at least have a proof of concept to get you to the point where you can get an investment. So I'd say to split your finances. If your idea is 12 months of runway, maybe give you then 6 months of runway and put your stuff into, put your the rest of that into an MVP, a minimum viable product. So how much that costs, I don't know. I would say start off with the number as whatever your technology cost is, call that 100. So then if my technology cost is 100, I'd say budget 50 towards the technology cost and 50 towards runway so I can do the idea. That's how you do your budgeting for to start a tech company.
Okay. And could you maybe work with entrepreneurs in such a way where they could obviously, like you just said, having 100 from a budget, and then you split that budget in two based on the aim and the responsibilities. But most importantly, say, we will get you started with the technology. So develop it, put that idea into an actual concept. Sorry, put that idea into an actual MVP where you develop something. And then that entrepreneur can take that to investors. And then once that investment comes through, then you can obviously integrate all the fancy things into the app. Do you 100%. Also work with entrepreneurs in that way?
We do. Obviously, we have fees involved, but that's exactly what we do. And then, of course, because we've done it, you know, you'll never find a lawyer who's actually done successful tech company in their field, has done a successful tech company and walked both roads. Most lawyers often just narrowly look in contracts, or business people know business, but they have no professional advisory services to offer. So we can walk that road with them and show them, well, how much will it cost to develop this piece of technology? You got a quote for X, but actually that X quote is way overpriced. You should rather get quote Y. That's what it should cost in the market. And of that quote Y, you only need 12% of it to show to an investor and pitch it. So we help with all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So businesses can come to you to assist in developing a product, but also can come to you from a consulting point of view or an advisory
100%.
Point of view. Say, I've got this product. I've been quoted X by a developer. Is this in or with, you know, is this market related or not? And yeah. And who owns the rights, those type of things, because I'm sure from a legal perspective, there's so many aspects to consider when starting a technology business.
100% aspects like that, aspects like privacy law, payment gateways, all that kind of stuff. Yep, you hit the nail on the head.
Awesome. So, Russell, I know there's a lot of things that you're trying to keep in secret because there's this future announcement that you may yet to make. But with whatever you can share, what's next for SwiftVee? Any future projects, collaborations? Yeah, you've obviously teased us a bit, but really, what's next for SwiftVee? If not, what's the vision for SwiftVee in 10 to 20 years?
100%. For 20 years, I don't know. I look at life 2 years at a time. Okay. 20 years could take us to Mars. You never know. We could be having the next podcast in 20 years' time in Mars, you and me in Bali, but that's besides the point. So I think, so I'm not saying these teasers or whatever to wind you up. Literally, what happens is, when we do these investment deals and these corporate partnerships, they have the rights over public announcements. So I will bring in the detail. What I can say is the SwiftVee side of things. So we're going outside South Africa next year, Namibia, Botswana, Zimbabwe. We're going to do auctions there. We're expanding our footprint. We are also moving into different offerings related to livestock, like value-added services, and that kind of thing. But we're moving outside South Africa next year. We're going trans-African. Are we hoping to open up the market further?
Sure, Russell. It sounds like you are a hardcore serial entrepreneur. But before I let you go, tell me about your TV show.
Yes. So I actually forgot to mention that. So I freelance for Carte Blanche and Channel ENCA. I'm a technology analyst. So they will call me onto the show and I'll do anything from talking about Bitcoin to Minister Gigaba's phone getting hacked to cyberbullying and everything in between. I'm generally on ENCA Moneyline, alternatively in the morning news, and on Carte Blanche on a Sunday night. So look out for me. And if you want to know more about my TV stuff, you can go to www.russellluck.com. And you can see the television stuff that I do and the public speaking that I do, or tune into the TV, and you'll catch me soon.
Wow. Awesome. Wishing you the best of success in your journey. I know that the Swiftly team will grow. It's a very unique offering, especially incorporating technology, but AI, you know, which sounds very fancy.
Yes.
But yes. It shows that your business is doing something, because you've been hitting these records. And so, yeah, I'm sure we're going to see more of these stories to come. And I can't wait for you to share these big deals coming in 2021. So keep us in the loop. And thank you so much for your time in talking to me in my podcast.
Yes. Likewise. Thank you very much for your time. And I also can't wait to share the news when it comes. And yeah, have a wonderful day further. And thanks for the exposure. I look forward to chatting again.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Your feedback is always important. Therefore, please rate and review this podcast. You can follow me on social media at Mbali Nwoko on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as well as YouTube. Should you wish to contact me directly, kindly send me an email at info@mbalinwoko.com. Look out for next week's episode. Until then, take care.